Welcome back to our channel, guys.
What's going on, everybody? Ooh, look at my hair.
No.
Good thing I don't have to. No, I'm gonna say it. Good thing I have to be on camera today.
Okay.
God.
Okay.
My hair looks fucked up. I would not film like this. So just go.
Okay. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Hey, family! Welcome back to our channel, guys.
Even in the privacy of our home, you could always expect the camera to be around in any conversation that you had, regardless of how embarrassing or intimate or private it was. It could end up on the blog.
With the rise of social media platforms like YouTube, a new genre of content has emerged: family vlogs, videos featuring the daily lives and antics of parents and their children. Some of these kids, dubbed kid influencers, have amassed millions of followers and raked in staggering amounts of money through brand deals, sponsorships, and advertising revenue.
But beneath the cute smiles and matching outfits lies an ethically murky industry that experts warn is rife with potential for exploitation and harm. In this episode, we'll examine the dark side of family vlogging, the role that platforms and algorithms play in perpetuating it, and the urgent need for stronger regulations and protections for children in the digital age.
Hi, I'm Adele.
I'm Anona.
And I'm Diego. You're listening to State of the Pod, live from Ithaca, New York. For those listening, the concept of family influencers may seem foreign, somewhat familiar, or they're a staple of your streaming habits. Regardless of your perspective, the statistics show that family influencers are enormously popular, and their popularity only continues to rise. Large channels like the Ace Family, boasting an astounding 18.4 million subscribers on YouTube, exemplify the immense popularity of these channels.
YouTube has a large user base of teens that may be attracted to this content. According to a 2022 Pew Research study, 95% of U.S. teens aged 13 to 17 use YouTube, making it the most popular online platform among this age group.
These influencers are not just chasing views and followers for fun. They have the potential to become millionaires with their content. A 2020 report found that influencer marketing is projected to be a $16.4 billion industry in the next few years.
So clearly, family vlogging is no small niche. It's a booming business. But by parents' financial success being linked to showing more and more of their life online, it begs the question if their children are truly consenting to be a part of this content, and how documenting their development to millions could negatively affect them in the future.
Acting in YouTube videos is a monetized form of labor, and for children, child labor. If they must act in this content, children deserve to be compensated properly for it. However, most kid influencers fall through the cracks of existing labor laws and industry regulations designed to protect child performers. A study by Riggio in 2020 explains that in the US, kid influencers are excluded from federal child entertainment laws, and there is no equivalent of the Coogan Law that requires a portion of a child actor's earnings to be set aside in a trust fund. This leaves the door wide open for financial exploitation by their parents.
As Riggio puts it, parents control the social media presence of their children, with no guarantee that they will save any of the profits for them. A disturbing example is the case of YouTuber Michelle Stauffer, who with her husband made monetized videos about their adopted son, Huxley, only to rehome him a few years later. When the Stauffers relinquished custody of Huxley, they also severed his claim to any of the funds his online presence earned. Additionally, children cannot open independent bank accounts until they're 18, so if they are compensated, their parents may still have access to their earnings.
But financial exploitation is not the only risk. The psychological impact of being put to work as a content creator as a child is enormous. Masterson outlines a range of physical and psychological risks threatening child influencers, including excessive hours, negative impacts on mental health like anxiety and self-esteem, as well as the potential for online harassment and stalkers.
Kid influencers face intense pressure to perform and create endless streams of footage that are sensational enough to gain views and be promoted in the YouTube algorithm. More on that later. They sacrifice their privacy, autonomy, and the right to play in order to generate profits. The line between authentic childhood moments and stage performances for the camera becomes increasingly blurred.
We spoke to Professor Brooke Erin Duffy, an associate professor in the Department of Communication at Cornell University, about influencers and algorithms. She spoke about the effect of children's digital footprint.
And not just that, but the, you know, this digital footprint follows you in ways that could impact your later life. And there's this narrative that I hear a lot and I think about a lot, which is like what you post on social media can get you hired, but it can also get you fired. And so there's this culture of surveillance that infiltrates social media. And I think it's especially worrisome when we think about children because they're vulnerable populations, because they don't have the cognitive ability to understand the implications of what they post online, because they don't realize the forms of commercial surveillance that they are agreeing to participate in when they join these sites.
We also talked about how influencers' families get roped into social media without really consenting.
You know, your average person's life compared to influencers where, you know, part of the job of being an influencer is mining your life for content and finding ways to, you know, make everyday moments into something that can be shared and ultimately commodified. And, you know, it's one thing when you are the influencer and have given consent to that, but it's very different when you're thinking about how to integrate. It's different when your friends and family members and children essentially become casts of characters in your social media feeds.
In 2021, YouTuber Jordan Cheyenne accidentally uploaded a video that showed her coaching her visibly distressed son to pose for a thumbnail. That's the photo that's shown with the YouTube video. Cheyenne defended her actions and claimed that mediating children's emotions and behaviors is common practice among family vloggers. As media studies scholar Dylan Reed Miller argues, this mediation should give us pause. It suggests that much of the seemingly candid, unfiltered content in this genre is actually the product of careful curation and labor behind the scenes, as we have argued.
In Miller's words, it is necessary to view all images from this genre skeptically, with an eye toward the ways their presentation tries to convince the audience that each performance did not require labor to produce. In other words, we should be critical of the authenticity portrayed in family vlogs and recognize the often invisible work that goes into crafting these performances.
The impact of this curated content is particularly concerning when we consider the rise of iPad kids, younger children who have been exposed to digital technology from a very early age. These children are not only consuming family influencer content, but are also more likely to emulate the behaviors they see on screen. Prolonged exposure to technology can lead to addiction and make it easier for these young audiences to spend more time creating and consuming content that may promote questionable ideas. We'll delve deeper into the implications of this trend for iPad kids later on. Children and family influencers wouldn't be what they are today without having some way of making money. Depending on the platforms utilized, there are different ways of making money. With Instagram and TikTok, influencers primarily rely on sponsorships and brand promotions for their sources of income.
Meanwhile, streaming and video platforms like Twitch and YouTube offer additional revenue streams for influencers. On Twitch, creators can earn money through donations, subscriptions, and ad revenue. YouTube has a unique ad revenue sharing system where creators can monetize their videos by enabling ads, and the more views and engagement a video receives, the more ad revenue it generates for the creator. However, YouTube's algorithm plays a significant role in determining which videos are promoted and recommended to viewers, ultimately influencing a creator's potential ad revenue.
When it comes to the curation of content, algorithms do serve an important structural function in organizing content. I mean, it would be impossible for anyone to comb through all the content. And these socio-technical systems have, as we've seen in recent years, play a fundamental role in shaping how we understand the world around us and our place within it. And so one of the ways this has played out has obviously been in the context of politics, where we hear about things that academics call filter bubbles or echo chambers, where essentially the algorithm provides you with content by quote unquote like-minded individuals. And so if you are a progressive, you are more likely to see content by progressives. If you are conservative, you're more likely to see content by conservatives. At the same time, algorithms and the more importantly, the platform companies that create them are wrought by the idea of attention, right? Attention generates data. Data generates money.
YouTube and other platforms' algorithms are designed to keep users engaged and on the platform for as long as possible, often at the expense of users' well-being. It prioritizes sensational content that will keep users engaged on the platform, thereby leading influencers such as family channels to continue pushing the boundaries of their content, harming their children in the process.
The algorithm recommends videos based on a user's viewing history and engagement patterns, creating a personalized feed tailored to their interests. However, this process can quickly lead users down a rabbit hole of increasingly extreme or harmful content.
The technical side of the algorithm is complex, but essentially, it analyzes vast amounts of user data to identify patterns and make predictions about what content a user is most likely to watch and enjoy. This data includes factors such as the videos a user has watched, the length of time they watched each video, the likes, dislikes, and comments they've left, and the channels they've subscribed to.
The more data the algorithm has, the more accurate its predictions become, creating a powerful tool for keeping users engaged on the platform. However, this also means that the algorithm is constantly reinforcing and amplifying the content that generates the most engagement, which often includes sensationalized or controversial videos.
One of the key factors that shapes success in this economy is visibility, right? So, and the way visibility is functions within this space is often as metrics as engagement or these other quantified markers of success. And so how do you become visible? Well, visibility can either be boosted or hindered by the algorithm, or more aptly, algorithms, of course, because behind the scenes of these platform companies, there are unseen forces that are dictating what gets seen and conversely, what gets concealed.
This algorithmic amplification is particularly problematic when it comes to family influencer content. The more outrageous or shocking the content, the more likely it is to be recommended by the algorithm and garner views. This incentivizes family influencers to push the boundaries of what is acceptable, often at the expense of their children's well-being and privacy.
Furthermore, the self-reporting age system on YouTube makes it easy for kids to lie about their age and gain access to content that's not suitable for them, such as videos with explicit language, violence, or sexual content and themes. This means that even content that's flagged as inappropriate and age-restricted by the algorithm can still be viewed by younger audiences.
YouTube's need for content moderation practices and algorithmic safeguards is especially important given its disproportionately high volume of young consumers, especially between the ages of 2 and 10 years old. Animated videos and cartoons that are popular among young children often show up on YouTube in streamed content for fun, lighthearted entertainment. In 2017, however, a sudden burst of videos was posted on YouTube, containing repeatedly disturbing themes. These videos contained, for example, well-known animated characters such as Elsa from Frozen or Peppa Pig engaging in inappropriate acts.
The mass posting of these videos, termed ElsaGate, was intended to target extremely young audiences, those of 2 to 6-year-old children, and take advantage of the algorithm that then fed this content to these viewers. Violent, sadistic, or sexual content, extremely inappropriate for children of young age groups, was posted, taken down, re-uploaded, and later redistributed across 40 to 50 channels with the hope of gaining millions of views in almost no time. Algorithm regulating mechanisms on YouTube Kids, such as significant restrictions and parent control options, still allowed for the streaming of ElsaGate videos, indicating a larger, entirely different problem.
These ElsaGate videos could bypass the automated algorithm because they contain animated characters and colorful graphics that feigned kids' entertainment or learning videos. This immediately moved past automatic content filtration. Children's psychology also plays a role in the dangerous cycle of content consumption, as they have a tendency to gravitate towards content that may be considered taboo or might be prohibited by their parents, wanting to watch what they are not allowed to watch, even if they're not aware of the content they're actually viewing.
The ElsaGate controversy highlights the dangerous flaws in YouTube's algorithm and the platform's inability to effectively filter out content that's harmful to children. It also underscores the vulnerability of young viewers overall, particularly those in the 2 to 6 age range, who may be drawn to content that seems familiar and fun, but has those disturbing themes.
The implications of ElsaGate are numerous and deeply concerning. It's worth noting that many large companies whose ads were being shown alongside these disturbing videos only began to take action and pressure YouTube to clean up the platform when their own products were being associated with the controversial account. This suggests that the well-being of children was not the primary motivator for addressing the ElsaGate problem, but rather the potential damage to brand reputations and advertising revenue.
The psychological impact of this type of content on young children cannot be overstated. Kids at this age are still developing their understanding of the world and are highly impressionable. Exposure to inappropriate content can lead to confusion, fear, and even long-term mental health issues.
Moreover, the ElsaGate phenomenon reveals the disturbing lengths that some content creators will go to in order to game the algorithm and attract views, even if it means exploiting children's vulnerabilities. It's a stark reminder of the need for stronger regulations and oversight of online platforms to protect young users.
While YouTube has taken steps to address the ElsaGate issue, such as implementing stricter content policies and improving its filtering system, the problem is far from solved. As long as the algorithm prioritizes engagement above all else, there will always be a risk of harmful content slipping through the cracks.
Despite the fact that platform companies assure us that they do not try to court children, we know that kids are, spend a lot of time online. They evade the various age restrictions in order to get access to online content. They are not necessarily aware of how these algorithms and data logics factor in. And so in the case that you mentioned of ElsaGate, we can think of the fact that the algorithms are serving content that is designed to lure children and to encourage children to share without acknowledging kind of the problematic nature of this type of content being served to children.
The extended use of tablets and social media by children, often referred to as iPad kids, can prove to be an extremely dangerous combination, exposing them to inappropriate content and mental health issues.
One of the biggest issues is the exposure children get when they use social media, content or streaming platforms, or any part of the internet as a whole. The algorithm, which curates content for social media users, lacks safeguards to ensure it's recommending appropriate content, as we have discussed. It simply favors those sensational videos to keep people on the app, leaving children vulnerable to finding videos that could affect them psychologically, like the sexually explicit content.
As we've shown, ElsaGate bypassed the algorithm in extremely subtle ways, making its way to children, even on the child-friendly YouTube Kids. If children are exposed to their tablets for an extended period of time, their unchecked usage could result in a higher likelihood of encountering this explicit content.
In short, tablets do not serve as a second parent. In fact, they do not have any way to mimic a parent and should not be relied on to substitute parenting given the extremely large risks associated with long-term usage. What we should do is restrict their usage and limit how much children use them. A study on the Curious Journal shows that the ideal discretionary screen time are half an hour to 1 hour a day for children ages of 3 to 7, an hour for ages 7 to 12, 1.5 hours for 12 to 15, and 2 hours for those 16 years of age.
Clearly, self-regulation by platforms is not enough. Many experts argue that stronger laws and external regulations are needed to rein in this industry for both child creators and viewers. Returning to our initial conversation on child influencers, Riggio asserts that, quote, the time is ripe to challenge the lack of protection for child influencers because neither current federal nor state laws encompass child influencers, end quote, We need to ensure that children are safe at all levels, from creator to viewer.
Some proposals include updating child entertainment labor laws to explicitly include kid influencers, increase enforcement and penalties by the Federal Trade Commission for exploitative practices, and implementing age restrictions and parental consent requirements on social media platforms.
Of course, any attempt to legislate in this space must grapple with thorny questions about the balance between child welfare and parental rights. But as Riggio notes, the Supreme Court has previously, quote, established that states have the power to protect children from harm, even above the wishes of their parents, and specified child labor as an appropriate area of regulation, end quote. To illustrate just how far-reaching and permanent the impact of family vlogging can be, let's look at a case study of a previously prominent family vlogging channel, the Zaccone Jolies.
Parents Jonathan and Anna Zaccone Jolie have been semi-daily vlogging for over a decade across multiple channels. In that time, they've amassed millions of subscribers and documented nearly every moment of their three children's lives, starting from birth. They are the quintessential example of turning family life into a profitable business powered by their children's presence.
But what will the digital footprint trailblazed by their parents mean for the Zaccone Jolie kids as they grow up? Researchers Lichtenstein et al. Performed a data analysis to quantify the sheer volume of posts, followers, and search results attached to each child's name online. The numbers are staggering.
As the authors write, quote, once the content has been released by the parents, it now belongs in the public domain. The reach of the digital footprint doesn't end at the parents' fingertips, end quote. The kids will inherit an indelible record of their childhoods, curated not by them, but by their parents and the public, for better or worse. The full ramifications of coming of age with an extensive, uncontrolled online presence are yet to be seen.
Sadly, the Zaccone Jolies are not an isolated case. In recent years, a string of scandals and controversies have pulled back the curtain on a rash of unethical and abusive practices in the family vlogging world. In March 2023, Ruby Frank, the mother behind the popular 8 Passengers channel, was arrested and charged with child abuse after one of her children escaped and sought help. Police discovered that Frank and her business partner had been subjecting their kids to horrific abuse off camera.
The parents behind the Family of Five channel, Michael and Heather Martin, pled guilty to child neglect charges after their so-called prank videos escalated into physical and emotional abuse. They lost custody of two of their children.
The LeBrant family has been called out numerous times for exploiting their children's pain for views, from a vlog insinuating that their 4-year-old had cancer when she didn't, to cringy April Fool's pranks. Everything under the sun. They've also faced backlash for an insensitive documentary comparing abortion to the Holocaust.
As we discussed earlier, YouTuber Jordan Cheyenne accidentally uploaded raw footage coaching her distraught 9-year-old son to pose and cry for a video thumbnail, exposing the performance pressure put on kid creators even in their most vulnerable moments.
And perhaps most notoriously, the story of Micah Stauffer rehoming her adopted son Huxley, who she had made the focal point of monetized content for years, sparked national outrage.
Again and again, these incidents reveal the ugly reality often hidden beneath the polished veneer of family vlogging influencer content. They also demonstrate how ill-equipped and uninterested social media platforms are at proactively identifying and preventing such harms.
So, what can be done? Beyond stronger laws and platform accountability, cultural critic and philosopher Joanne McNeil argues that we as viewers and consumers also have a responsibility to think critically about the media we engage with. She writes, "The public has a misplaced assumption that anything that is consumable is acceptable. If the platforms offer it, if it trends, if it fills a recommendation box, then it must be okay. But that's not true. We have to question the things that are put in front of our eyes for our judgment. Understand the source, understand the process in which it was made, and why it was made in the first place."
I think I would just want to reiterate my point that there's a lot of dismissiveness and denigration to this career, and part of it is based upon the fact that it is upheld as this dream job, and part of it, of course, is based upon the kind of glossy image that influencers and creators peddle to us. But the reality is, this is time-intensive, labor-intensive, and often emotionally grueling work. And so I do hope that it garners the, not just the respect, but also the economic compensation that it deserves when we are thinking about adults.
As family vlogging continues to explode in popularity, it's crucial that we grapple with the ethical quandaries and potential harms it poses to children, from psychological to financial abuse. The onus is on lawmakers, platforms, and us as a society to put guardrails in place to prevent exploitation and abuse. Because at the end of the day, no amount of likes, follows, or sponsorship deals is worth robbing a child of their right to privacy, play, and self-determination.
The future of family vlogging and kid influencers remains to be written, but we have a moral obligation to ensure that it is not written at the expense of the well-being and dignity of children.
Thank you for listening to this episode of State of the Pod. Special thank you to the Investigative Biology Department at Cornell University for our recording equipment. And thank you, Professor Brooke Duffy at Cornell University, for speaking with us.